Hello and a very warm welcome indeed to Quadriga, coming to you from the heart of Berlin. Now, for many years, Angela Merkel has been the key figure in European politics, the European leader. Some commentators have even called her the leader of the free world. But there's a new contender for the leadership role. French President Emmanuel Macron has just completed a state visit to Washington, the first foreign visitor to receive such an honour since Donald Trump took office. And he rocked Congress with a speech in which he defiantly challenged President Trump's position on climate change, free trade and the Iran nuclear deal. So is Macron about to eclipse Angela Merkel both in Europe and internationally? Macron or Merkel, who's leading Europe? That's our question on Quadriga this week. And to discuss that question, I'm joined here in the studio by Matthew Karnichnik, chief Europe correspondent for Politico. Matthew argues that Macron wants to lead Europe but can't, while Merkel could lead Europe but won't. Also with us is Pascale Hugues. She is both an author and a journalist for the French magazine Le Point. And she argues that Angela Merkel used to be called the Queen of Europe. Now Emmanuel Macron seems to be the new king. And a warm welcome too to Kirsten Gammelin, who's based here in Berlin, reporting for the Süddeutsche Zeitung. She says it's in Germany's interest to support France, not just in its efforts to reform Europe, but also in transatlantic relations. Thank you all three for being here with me today here on Quadriga. Matthew, I'd like to begin with you. I've just pointed out that your quote at the top of the show says that Emmanuel Macron wants to lead but can't, yeah? I think we got that quote from you before this address that he gave to Congress. So have you changed your mind since you heard the address?
No, I haven't. I think the problem that he has is that France is just not strong enough alone to take a leadership role in Europe, to take the kind of steps in Europe that he really wants to pursue. I mean, he has the image, he has the energy, certainly, but without a strong endorsement from Germany, it's going to be impossible for him to take things forward. And I think this is the real frustration in France now, that they're not getting enough support in Paris from the Germans. And it's really not clear whether that's going to change. And at the moment, it looks like, you know, the time is just running out. And on these really crucial issues involving the Eurozone reforms and these steps that they want to take to integrate the Eurozone more and to make it crisis-proof, as they say, Every step is so controversial in Germany that it's very hard to see how Europe is going to take this great leap forward that Macron has been talking about.
OK, we'll talk about that tug of war between France and Germany shortly. But Pascale, I'd like to just bring you in and get an impression. You're our French representative here on the panel today. What was your first impressions of this this audacious address from your president in Washington?
Well, I think a lot of people were quite critical in France. Uh-huh. Who is this president who's sort of dancing around with this controversial and difficult American president? And I think the talk in the Congress has changed the view a little bit, because he was critical, he addressed difficult points, and he's not simply the puppet of Donald Trump. And so it's changed the balance and added credibility to Macron in France.
Mm-hmm. Interesting remarks. Kirsten?
Yeah, but you know what? It proved actually what we know. Angela Merkel has been in the leadership now for 12 years. That's true. But she has never been a good speaker. So, and given that Macron has really its talent to give speeches that are really going around the world, like actually like Obama was able to give speeches.
It was reminiscent of Obama. That's why I used the word audacious.
Exactly. Yeah. That what came into my mind. So yeah. Obama could impress the world by words, and also Macron can that. And Macron is very smart. He's arguing in a dialectic way. So, mm-hmm. I mean, so he can say on the one hand, Trump is my partner in the transatlantic relationship, but I'm on the other hand very critical on several issues.
So when you say he's operating in a dialectic way, you mean he's being very cunning?
Yeah, exactly. That was the way I want to say. And now, I mean, he was there for 3 days, and now Merkel is coming for 3 hours, and you see already the difference. But to balance that a bit, I would say, and what I said also in my statement, mm-hmm. of course, after winning the election in France, Macron was kind of a leader of Europe already, because he made sure that Europe will not be taken over by Le Pen and others from the right spectrum. And everybody also in Germany was very happy. But you saw already at this time that in Germany there was this election campaign mm-hmm. and there was not really a big run to European ideas. It was not. And now we have the chapter in the coalition treaty. The first chapter is about Europe. But the man who negotiated that chapter into the coalition treaty was Mr. Scholz, the former SPD leader. Now he is retired, let's say retired. He's not there anymore. And nobody is actually taking now this chapter to put it into reality. Okay. So, I mean, Macron is, for the moment, he is in the leading position for Europe.
Okay, well, as Pascal already mentioned, after very public shows of warmth and affection for President Trump in the first part of his visit to Washington, Emmanuel Macron delivered a remarkable speech in Congress. In the address, he spelled out his vision of global leadership, challenging many of Donald Trump's positions, not least his determination to put America first and shun internationalism. Let's listen in.
We can choose isolationism, withdrawal, and nationalism. This is an option. It can be tempting to us as a temporary remedy to our fears. But closing the door to the world will not stop the evolution of the world. It will not douse but inflame the fears of our citizens. We have to keep our eyes wide open to the new risks right in front of us.
Was it dialectic? Was it cunning? I don't know. Was it? I mean, my question is, Cassidy, was it a deliberate strategy? Did he first of all give the big bear hug to the American president and then stab him in the back?
No, first he's building a bridge, and then he. Let's put that picture. I would prefer the picture that Macron is building a bridge towards Trump, and then he invites him to come over the bridge, and now it's up to Trump whether he would like to do that or not. I mean, he was very clear, Macron, in his speech, saying that the transatlantic partnership is a very big issue and should stay like it is. But as he said, we have to open our eyes widely and we have to work together, not against each other. I mean, this was... I think he was actually speaking to two audiences, though.
I think he was addressing two different audiences with the speech and with his treatment of Trump. And in the sort of the petting and the hugging of Trump, he was obviously trying to reach Trump, and that probably didn't play as well back home. But I think there was a little bit of a cut, if you will, between his treatment of Trump and the pictures and the speech. I mean, the speech was, in parts was fairly harsh, but I think that the speech was more directed at his home audience, and so that he didn't lose credibility with them, mm-hmm. that he doesn't look like, Trump's mm-hmm. towel boy, that he's just standing there being nice to him and grinning along with everything that he does. And I think that it's a difficult trick to pull off, and he seems to pull it off. But I think the proof is in the pudding, as they say, and we'll see what Trump does in the coming weeks. Because all of this will only matter if Trump does what the Europeans want him to do, which is to not impose the planned steel tariffs and to not withdraw from the Iran deal. And at this point, it's very questionable that he will toe that line.
But to stay 1 second at this speech, 1 second only, and your question of this TV show, actually, is Macron the leader? And mm-hmm. I mean, he was the first person that spoke there in Washington, gave that speeches, and I think that answered the question itself, actually. Mm-hmm. That Macron now is chosen to put the Europeans in a position...
She's been there too, but it was a different administration.
I think he's very clever, because it's difficult with some so egomaniac and complicated like Donald Trump. When he was elected, the whole Western world went, horrible. And I mean, you're not going to get him into your boat and if you just show, horror. So first he invited him to Paris last year to the 14th of July celebration and reminded, the stronghold since the war, but I mean, the strong tradition and the history we have in common. And now he's playing this, which also comes very good in America, all these pomp and circumstances, and it's quite harmless. It's not, there's nothing bad about it. And I think it's probably cleverer and better than Frau Merkel, Mrs. Merkel, who immediately after the election went as a Protestant, the daughter of a pastor, and started saying, you know, you have to respect democracy. And of course, you know, Trump was immediately withdrawing, and it's going to be difficult for her.
Yeah,
he played the charm. I mean,
the bar is now very high for Angela Merkel.
And I think it's better to be soft and charming with such people than to sort of raise the moral finger and give them a lesson.
In her attitude, Merkel was soft to him. I mean, she can do much better and much more Protestantic. I mean,
that Angela Merkel can be an incredibly charming and winning individual. We know this, yeah. It's often masked, but she's won over many people against the odds.
It's hard as well with a macho like Trump for a woman like Merkel. Yeah. She's a woman, she's not very attractive, and she's not very young.
And that's she's not
really
the woman.
Hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think you know, beyond these these sort of superficial qualities, which, you know, I wouldn't doubt that plays a role in Trump's mind. There's also the fact, though, that she is also the representative of the refugee policy in Europe, which is Trump's, you know, main domestic issue is the danger of Islam, the danger of letting in refugees and so forth. So I think she's also a symbol for Trump, and so it's just for that reason alone, it's very difficult for him, I think, to have a good relationship with her, because it would force him to disavow some of his core positions.
Well, talking about relationships, you could argue that Emmanuel Macron is really the only European leader who has so far made an impression on Donald Trump. The two men speak of each other as buddies, and commentators have been calling it a bromance. But just how far does the friendship go?
Congratulations. The first meeting in May of 2017. Was it a handshake or a wrestling match? Either way, Macron seemed to have won over the unpredictable Trump. Later, Macron invited the American president to be guest of honor at the Bastille Day military parade, with all the pomp and circumstance Trump so craves. Arriving in Washington, D.C., Macron stepped up the flattery with a symbolic gift, an oak from a French forest where, in World War I, American and French troops had fought the Germans side by side. It's a rather touchy-feely bromance.
I like him a lot.
Macron and Trump. Is it a male friendship with political benefits?
Kirsten, Trump and Macron, we've got, they're 30 years apart. We've got an intellectual, we've got a TV junkie on the other side, we've got an internationalist and an isolationist. What is the glue between the two? Explain it to us.
I mean, and could see now at the pictures, they like to play to each other or with each other a bit. It's a small talk. And the clue, I think, is that both, or what Trump actually likes with Macron and what they also said, both, they are both outsiders, not coming from the establishment.
Those
so
Mavericks.
They came into power by an extraordinary circumstances. They are both self-made men, like Trump always underlines. He ran his own empire, and Macron came from banker's position. And they are both very powerful.
But they are both embattled at this point in time. I mean, Pascal Hugues knows most about that. I saw one very recent survey about the level of dissatisfaction with Emmanuel Macron in France at the moment. It has now reached 58%, according to one poll. And we're sitting here talking about him as a prospective sort of European or global leader.
Well, I think the French, when they are dissatisfied with Macron, they are not dissatisfied with his foreign policy or with his trip to America. They are dissatisfied because he's trying to change France and to reform it. Mm. And we have these strikes, the train strikes and the student strikes and the employees strikes. I mean, this is an inherent problem in France. It's a country which is very, very difficult to reform. It's attached to privileges. It's attached to tradition. And he's very, very... he said he would do it. He is doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think he's very brave because he could really break his teeth doing that.
And you had not really big strikes. I mean, I saw already years ago really huge strikes. strikes in France. And now what we see now, it's really moderate, I would say. I was surprised by that.
Mm. Yeah.
It's interesting, Matthew, that you mentioned that France is, again, talking about relative influence of Merkel and Macron and the relative influence of France and Germany. You said that France is a smallish country on the global stage, but France has three things that Germany doesn't have. It has a permanent seat on the UN Security Council, it has a nuclear arsenal, and it has the capacity to take part in airstrikes, as it did very recently against chemical weapons targets in Syria. That's a very different backdrop.
Right, and I think the third point is really important. Just sort of the military capability of France writ large is something that Germany doesn't have. And in terms of potential U.S. partners for Trump at the moment, France actually has a greater capability even than the U.K., where the military has, you know, various issues. The reality is that France has shown a willingness to engage in very difficult and dangerous military operations. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Trump and that the military brass in Washington value and take very seriously. So I think this is another, you know, very important bargaining chip that France has vis-a-vis the United States at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Merkel can't really offer.
Okay. Yeah, and on the contrary, actually, when it comes to Germany in Washington, I've been there recently. I mean, for many people in the U.S. administration, Germany is a kind of an enemy like China regarding economic
Germany
issues.
Germany is an enemy like China.
Kind of. Mm. Yeah, because there's this surplus in the trade balance. Yep. And Merkel is always showing up and talking about trade and economy stuff and like that. And if it comes to things like foreign policy, so Germany is often saying, okay, just do it and good luck, but we are not involved in it. And that is also a big problem and what they see in Washington and what makes it more difficult for Merkel to get along with Trump.
So it didn't help her case, I think, when she arrives in Washington that Germany didn't participate in the airstrike in Syria.
Sure. Yeah. Well, against this backdrop, what about the European project, which many commentators say is in danger of falling apart? That's why Emmanuel Macron fervently believes that France and Germany must work closely together to come up with fundamental reforms. Will it happen, though? Well, when the French and the German leaders met here in Berlin recently, the messages were distinctly mixed.
The rendezvous was anything but romantic. In mid-April, Chancellor Merkel took Emmanuel Macron to the construction site of the Humboldt Forum in Berlin, deliberately chosen to stand for Europe as a construction site. Macron had already presented his architectural vision months before, a sovereign, crisis-proof EU with common foreign, defense and financial policies. Now he's awaiting Merkel's response.
I don't think it's a matter of our talking about one or the other instrument, but of our being certain what objective we hope to achieve, of our having one and the same political goal.
Of course, the positions of France and Germany always have different starting points. We need debate, and we need open debate, and the ability to compromise in the end.
Are Merkel's pragmatism and Macron's vision directed at the same goal?
Good question. Do France and Germany, Pascal, have the same goal?
On certain subjects, yes. I think on Europe, on the whole, yes, of course. And it's very clear for the Germans as well how this French-German motto is important. And the Germans, Angela Merkel says it. I mean, they know very well that in this difficult world, in turmoil, Europe is very important. But Macron has made some very precise propositions. Mm-hmm. And on the finance, you know, European budget, a European financial minister, and there the Germans are, I mean, I think the majority of the Germans, especially in the party of Angela Merkel and in the CSU, its Bavarian counterpart, mm-hmm. the conservatives, there are very many, a lot of apprehension, and a lot of people don't want that at all. So it's very difficult for Macron, because on the one hand, it's interesting, on the one hand, his election was a triumph in Germany. Everybody loved him because he's young, he's clever, he went through this very good, a little bit elitaire French system, he can talk, and I mean, they're absolutely, you know, they're in love with him.
It's the Obama phenomenon.
The Obama, exactly, yeah. Maybe more because it comes from, anyway. And then he makes proposals which the Germans are very suspect about, and they don't want to go as far as that. It's too dangerous for the Germans. And Merkel is again, like in the in the defense policy, she is tied by Parliament, which is the French president has a lot of power. He can decide everything on his own, send raids on Syrian, and decide about the European policy more or less on his own. But the German Chancellor, and it's a sign of democracy, has to ask the Parliament, and the Parliament is not going to say yes to a European budget and to a European financial.
Okay, Matthew, what is going to happen next? It's not a very promising constellation.
Well, nothing. I would slightly disagree with you. I think that Merkel should, could show more leadership here, could show more courage, and really say, we need to do this, we need to do this, this is important, and here is why. That is what has been missing in this debate. As you say, the Germans really liked Macron, just like they like Europe. They like both in the abstract, but when you get down to the details, that's where it gets very complicated, when you start talking about measures that might force Germany to pay more or put more German resources at risk, then all of a sudden, the stop signs start going up. And I think this has been the big frustration for the French in these discussions. And the problem is that the time is running out. And at the EU level in the coming months, there's sort of a mountain of things that need to get done, from selecting a new ECB president to selecting a new commission president to selecting a new council president and so forth.
New parliament.
A new parliament to completing the budget. They haven't even succeeded in completing the next budget under the current European Commission, and it doesn't look like they're going to. So it's very difficult to see how this Macron-Merkel dialogue is going to result in this great leap forward that we've been hearing about from Macron for the past couple of months.
Has this also got something to do with the fact that Macron is the new kid on the block, effectively? He's turned to Angela Merkel, he says, I need your help, and she... She suddenly looks like a spent force.
I think it has more to do that she's just unwilling to engage in this debate because she knows that she doesn't have the support from her own people.
Pragmatism.
And they made the mistake of not putting it at the top of the agenda in the election campaign. It's at the top of the coalition agreement, but in very vague language, but they did not put it out there during the campaign and say, this is what we're going to do in Europe, this is why we need to do it, to explain to people, and then they would have had a mandate. They don't really have a popular mandate to do anything major in Europe at the moment, to be honest.
I would slightly disagree because, of course, it was not an issue in the European election, in the German election campaign, and it was really a missing point. That's true. But actually, Merkel is now in her fourth term. Mm. And everybody thinks, and I think, including her, that's the final term. So actually, that could lead to more freedom and liberty. She should feel free to engage and to try to put out bigger things and not only thinking in this small stuff. And I would doubt that she's not willing to do so. I would really doubt that she's not willing to go further in Europe with Macron, but... the thing is, she's not fighting for that. And she does not have the support of her own party. And I mean, okay, and then you can ask, okay, if she's not fighting, she cannot have the support. So at a certain point, she should start fighting. She should go out and give a speech, like, actually, if you talk to people in the Kanzleramt here and ask them, so what is the difference between Macron and Merkel? So they say slightly in a... smiling face. The difference is that Macron gave speeches and Angela Merkel did not yet give a speech. So please, I think she should feel free to go to university or somewhere and to give a big speech about Europe and what she wants to do in Europe. Because what we are missing still is her proposals for Europe. I mean, Macron came out and everybody is discussing these Macron proposals and everybody now... is looking forward that Germany could go with Macron along. But why doesn't come Germany out with own proposals?
So the speech is difficult for Merkel.
Even in the heights of the refugee crisis,
she had this formula, wir schaffen das, we'll manage it. But the speech is difficult. She can't do that. And that's okay. It's another style. But she could come out with proposals.
Yeah, exactly.
And fight. That's true. And one has to wonder, is she really European? I mean, she grew up. I think she is, but she grew up in another Europe. She grew up in East Germany. She didn't grow up like Macron, who as a child, you know, was in, I mean, he's 40. So he's never known anything else than Europe and, you know, traveling free. And this is something that, I mean, it's an emotional thing, but it sits in the bones, something like that.
Yeah, but it's 30 years ago. It's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the time for speech is probably past at this point. And that's, I think, the challenge that she has.
Yeah.
The question we have been addressing today, Macron or Merkel, who's leading Europe? Who is sitting on the front seat of the famous tandem? Kirsten.
For the moment, Macron is sitting there, and Germany are good advice to follow him, to sit next to him.
Pascal?
Yeah, I agree with that. Germany has, the French have waited 6-7 months now for Germany to take the wheel, and now it's really time.
Matthew, the tandem?
I don't think it really is a tandem. I think that Macron is sitting there trying to pull along, and Merkel is dragging her feet. And this is the huge problem, and it's probably not going to change in the short term.
Okay, thanks so much, all three of you, for being here today. Great debate. I hope the tandem doesn't get a flat tire. On that note, thanks very much for joining us. Come back next week to Quadriga. Tschüss. Bye bye.